Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Canton, Ohio, and earned a BA and an MA from Case Western Reserve University and a PhD from Kent State University. He and his wife, Randy, have adopted 10 children. The author of 15 books, he's a clinical psychologist, an authority on parenting and behavioral issues, and he hosts a radio show entitled The Doctor Is In on over 400 stations nationwide. His name, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Ray Guarendi, who hosts a national radio show entitled The Doctor Is In on over 400 stations. And the doctor is with us today. Doctor, would you lead us in an opening prayer, please?
Glad to, Jack. Dear Lord, thank you for everything you've given us. Help us to be aware every day more and more what you've given us. Help us not to ignore it. Help us to use all you've given us to serve others and to love you better. In our Lord's name, amen.
Can we start by you talking about growing up in Canton, Ohio, and about your mom and dad, please?
My mom and dad were Italian, 100%, Jack. So the rule was, when you're Italian, no question, you go to grandma and grandpa's house every Sunday for dinner. No questions asked. That's the way it was. And you went to a parish called St. Anthony's, which, by the way, if some of your listeners might be familiar with Mother Angelica from EWTN, that was her parish. My dad was a freshman at McKinley High School when Mother Angelica was a senior. And I was exposed to the Mother Angelica story long before she founded EWTN, because she was in Canton, Ohio, as a nun, as a mother there at one of the local places. And all of us Italians kind of hung together. That's the way it was, you know. You weren't allowed to move more than about, maybe 600 yards from home, something like that. I had a renegade aunt that moved about 3 miles away, but we still accepted her.
And you had to date an Italian girl, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because when I didn't, my grandmother, she, you know, Italians in those days, Mitigans is what they said, Mitigans, the way they called it. But they came to like her. After a while, she gave me an ultimatum, Jack. We were dating, and she thought I was dragging my feet. So about 2 years into the relationship, she says to me, "You either tell me your name or it's over." So I thought, okay, push, push, push.
All right. What were you like as a kid?
Immature. My mother, one time, I cried for 9 hours. They went to a wedding. I didn't get to go. So I decided to cry. I was with my aunt. I think I set a record. 9 hours. Finally, she took me there. Another time, I was in the basement. And you remember those little games called Kitty in the Keg, where you had these barrels that you unwound, and you got smaller and smaller until you got down to this tiny barrel with a little kitty in it? Do you remember that by any chance?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I threw it against the wall, and it smashed. And I said to my mother, who was downstairs, "Pick this up." And she said, "I'm not picking it up, Raymond. You're going to pick it up." So I went over to the cinder block wall. Now, Jack, this shows you how bright I was as a child. Went over to the cinder block wall, and I started butting my head against the cinder block wall. I figure, okay, I got her now. She's putty in my hands. She started toward me. I'm figuring, all right, I win this one. My Italian mother, 5'1", 105 pounds, said, "Here, Raymond, let me help you." I quickly decided headbutting was not all it was cracked up to be. So that's a little bit of a glimpse into some of my vinegar as a kid.
We're talking to Dr. Rager, and he has many gifts and talents, one of which he's got a great sense of humor. Okay, you get a BA and MA from Case Western Reserve University, a PhD, Kent State, you're a psychologist. And by your own admission, you left the Catholic Church for 8 years. I quote you now, "I was a kind of new atheist." What's a new atheist?
The old atheist makes sense, Jack. The old atheists logically say there is no God. Therefore, I can do what I want. Now, in a perverse sort of way, that makes sense, because if there is no God, you really only have to worry about being legal. I was a new atheist, and the new atheists are all over the place. There is a God, but he thinks just like me. That's what I was, Jack. I kind of said, well, you know, this religion thing's good. I got it. But, you know, I want to go where I'm comfortable. I want to go where I like it. I want to go where I'm somewhat more entertained. I want to go where I find it more appealing. And that's what I did. I drifted out for 8 years and meandered around and kind of a religious treading water.
All right, another quote. "I didn't leave, but I defected on sight."
I wasn't mad. Jack, you know how people get mad at the Catholic Church? Here's how mostly it works. They get mad because it's below the waist. They don't like the church's teaching on morality, especially sexual and marriage. So what happens is that's the number one reason morally they leave. When was the last time you heard somebody say, "You know why I left that Catholic Church? I'll tell you what. They made me sick. They talked about that you have to take care of the poor. Oh, I hate that." You know what they said? They said you're not supposed to steal. Is that disgusting or what? There's no way I'm going to listen to that. No. It's usually the sexual morality that makes people leave the church. That wasn't why I left. It was just I decided, let's go check out and see what might be more attractive out there for me, religiously speaking.
We're talking to Dr. Ray Guarendi, who decided to come back to the Catholic Church. And now a lot of people are thinking of leaving or have left. When we come back, we'll talk to him about why he came back. And I'm Jack Rizzullo, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rizzullo. We're with Dr. Ray Guarendi. If you want to learn more, drray.com, and the man has given over 3,000 talks. You came back to the Catholic Church. A lot of people have left and are thinking of leaving. Why should they rethink that?
My first year in college, Jack, was as an engineer. Engineers can't say, well, you have your formulas and I have my formulas. We have to agree to disagree. That's all. One of us is going to have the wrong formulas and the bridge is going to fall down. I had a mind that said, if Christianity is true, then what did this Jesus teach? What did he mean to establish or leave us? As I got further and further outside the Catholic Church, I became more confused. Absolutely. I didn't know what to believe, Jack. You know as well as I do, there are over 35,000 denominations and independent churches in the United States alone, according to the Oxford Dictionary of Christian Denominations. Okay. Well, what do they teach? They teach a wide variety of things. And I looked at this and thought, well, how do I know what to believe? I want to know what to believe. Obviously, Christ didn't say, well, there's a lot of wiggle room here and all this stuff. You know, you want to baptize a baby, you don't. That's kind of up in the air. You Catholics, you believe that white wafer is the God of the universe. Well, that's a cute little belief, but the Protestants don't believe that. So either way's okay with me. Oh, you want to pray for your departed grandma who's dead and her soul? Go ahead. But you don't have to if you don't want to. I mean, I got so confused, Jack. I kept thinking, I came so close to leaving Christianity because I kept thinking, what is it? How much of it can I grab hold of? Well, I decided something. I'm a psychologist, Jack, and I recognize that I have a lot of questions, but not a lot of answers. And there are people who are much smarter than I am who have answers. So what I did is I said, all right, I'm going to look into this. I'm going to look into this with everything I got. I'm going to read and I'm going to listen to people who are much smarter than me about this whole Christian thing. Why do they believe it? Why do they think this guy was God? Why do they think that that white wafer is something he left us as a miracle? I don't get this. Where's this coming from? And I read, and I went back in the very first centuries of the church, and I said, what these people believe? These are the ones hanging around Christ. Man, there was a guy named Ignatius who knew the Apostle John for decades. A guy named Polycarp. He was also a follower of the Apostle John. What did they write? Because they wrote things. And the more I looked into it, Jack, the more I said, oh, man, the stuff that I was told that the Catholic Church added on in the later centuries was there in the beginning. I was shocked. I had heard it, but I never looked into it. One thing I've realized, Jack, I can come up with a lot of doubts, but I got to check and see if there's any substance in my doubts. I got to look into it. This is a little bit too big to let go. Is there a God? Isn't there? Is Christ God, or is he a nutcase? That's too big to ignore. I could drift through my life and say, well, what's the matter? You know, when I get there toward the end, I'll just say to God, well, I finally found out you're here. Couldn't do it, Jack.
We're talking to Dr. Ray Guarendi. Whatever the man does, he does in big numbers. So he's got a radio show on 400 stations. He's given 3,000 talks. He's written 15 books. And he and his wife, Randy, adopted 10 children. Ray, why?
Tax deductions, Jack. I would get killed in taxes, man. If you adopt in December, you still get the tax deduction for the whole year. You know, they pay for themselves at first, or then you start to fall behind. But, you know.
So
I came home one day from Cleveland Clinic, told my wife. He said, if we have children, get on a TV afternoon talk show because it's a miracle. I had something called Sertoli only cell syndrome. That means from birth, I was empty. Now, my grandmother was really excited that it was Italian. She said, well, at least it's Italian. And I told my mom, I said, hey, Ma, they said that this was congenital. That means it came from you. So I thought about suing her, Jack, but I let it go because the statute of limitations had run out. But I told her, I gave her a warning. I said, that better never happen again. So my wife and I sat down and we said, well, what do we do? What do we do? Can we adopt? You know how hard it is to adopt. Yeah, maybe we can get one child. Maybe two. Okay, let's see what we can do. So we pursued adoption. Our first two kids were private adoptions, a boy, girl. We thought, that's it. What are we going to do? We got boy, girl. Okay, the standard American family now. But we found out something, Jack. This was true then, and it's still true now to a lesser degree. If you're not concerned about the race of the child, you can adopt more quickly. So we have 3 white, 2 Hispanic, 2 biracial, and 3 black children. That's our family constellation. Of course, my wife used to walk through the grocery stores with this troop trailing behind her. And some people would look at her like, I wonder if she knows them ain't all hers. And I tell them, I suspect her, but I can't catch her, you know?
Okay. What's the single biggest thing you and your wife, Randy, have learned from raising those 10 adopted children?
Wild diversity of personalities. I tell people, I got some children going to serve the church. I got some that might serve time. They have a huge variability of who they are, their wiring, their nature, their genetics. And this isn't just true with adopted kids. This is true with any family of children. The kids have their own unique personalities. And parents have to try to put a moral system over those personalities. Some kids flat out, oh, mother, did you want me to make my bed before I studied? And then I'll stand in the corner because I misbehaved and you didn't catch me. So I'll just decide to do it because I want to do that. And then other kids are going to look at you like, go ahead. Put me in the corner. I'll stand there for 3 hours. No matter to me. You're not going to break me. I don't care. Nature of the beast. That is by far the number one thing we learned.
One of his 15 books is Adoption. Choosing it, living it, loving it. We're talking to Dr. Ray Guarendi. If you want to learn more, Dr. Ray, drray.com. When we come back, we're going to ask him to paint a picture for us of our culture today that the kids face. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasul, and we're with Dr. Ray Guarendi, who hosts national radio show The Doctor Is In on over 400 stations. Doc, paint for us a picture of the culture that our kids are growing up in today.
A parent will sit in my office, Jack, and they'll describe their 16-year-old or their 20-year-old or their 28-year-old, and they're befuddled and crushed. They will say, what happened? We didn't raise him this way. Why does he think like this? Why has he rejected so much of what we taught him? And I will say to them, I believe you. I don't think you did raise him this way, but you underestimated what did. Jack, most of human history, the main shapers of a child were mom, dad, the tribe, the clan. Nowadays, the forces that shape our children are so powerful. They are everywhere. They creep into our homes like the fog. And most parents underestimate it. They don't realize the power of the media, of social movements, of social media, of computers, of television, of music, of celebrities, of sports figures. All of these are incredibly appealing and shape how the child is supposed to think according to the new enlightened culture. And the parents who really are trying to raise a decent kid are shocked that at age 15, 17, 19, 28, 41, the kid has moved away from everything they've tried to teach him. And I'll tell you what, Jack, the number one referral I now get in my office, number one, most common, is parents trying to deal with young adult children who are very difficult to deal with, who have rejected the parents, who have looked at the parents like you are religious throwbacks, and I don't want anything to do with you, you Neanderthals. That's the number one referral I deal with now.
I quote you, 16 is the terrible twos times 8 with a driver's license. Okay, when we were kids, Doc, it was a dictatorship in the home. Now it's a democracy. How'd that happen, and why did that happen?
My first book, Jack, was written when I was in my 20s. It's called You're a Better Parent Than You Think. I was at a mental health center, and I was seeing parent after parent after parent struggling with disciplining their kids. Number one problem among parents is disciplining the young kids. I thought, what's going on here? I don't remember my mom and dad being so frustrated over trying to control me. I don't remember my mom and dad getting disrespected like these parents are talking about. I don't remember my mom and dad allowing me to do the kinds of things these kids are doing. And I realized, Jack, it was me. It was the shrinks. We have, in the last 40 to 50 years, radically altered the proper, psychologically correct, enlightened way to raise children. We have undercut parents' authority. We have damaged their resolve. We have undercut their confidence. They're second-guessing themselves. They leave him on the pot for 4 minutes too long. Is he going to grow up to be a tattooed-faced motorcycle gang member on Springer? And you named him John because you were hoping it would help in the toilet training. Sorry about that, Jack. So, given that, the shrinks have done, I believe, untold damage in their new theories, their new psychological correctness on how parents are supposed to do it. And it's blowing up in parents' faces. And so what happens? Well, the shrinks tell them, you're just not doing it right. You got to do more of it. See it all the time, Jack. Among, I'll tell you what, I get PhDs in my office. I get enormously bright lawyers, doctors, and they are being eaten alive by a five-year-old.
Dr. Ray, if you ever want to get on the Jerry Springer Show, I think I could help you.
Well, you know, okay, Jack. Wait a minute. Now that you mentioned that, I did Springer about 8 times.
Really?
But this was back before he dove into the sewer, okay? The last show I was on Springer, I said, I'm not coming back to this. But prior to that, Jerry was somewhat level in his approach to these topics.
I think he was the mayor of Cincinnati or something for a while. So, okay.
Yes, he was.
One of your books is entitled Advice Worth Ignoring. You're saying don't listen to these experts. Well, Doc, who should we as parents listen to?
You judge all advice by how well does this work in your home with your morals and value system. Jack, the secular experts don't think like morally traditional religious people. They don't. Go to the computer and type in child self-esteem. Now, the last I looked, there was over 90 million options. Why? Well, because the experts believe that self-esteem is the preeminent moral virtue, even though the research has shown it's not related to a whole lot at all. Type in child humility search. Small fraction. When's the last time you heard an expert talk about humility? Now, Jack, my humility is something I'm very proud of. So, given that, the experts don't really think like parents, especially those trying to raise moral children in a religious home. Advice Worth Ignoring takes 50 of the most common, and you'd recognize them, Jack. If you looked at those, you'd say, oh, yeah, I read about them. Oh, yeah, I've seen this in women's magazines. Oh, yeah, I heard this expert talk about this on a radio show. 50 of the most common pieces of now dominant expert advice that can really cause problems for a parent.
You know, I think you got potential to be a speaker or a radio guest. You know that, Grindy? So,
I'll tell you what, by the time I get to be 80, I should have this down pat.
All right, I quote you. Love without discipline is child abuse. You discipline because you love them. How should we discipline and instruct our kids?
Parents will say to me, I just feel guilty. Oh, am I too strict? Am I too strict? I just feel guilty. And I say to them, you are the kindest, most gentle teacher your child will ever have. If he mouths off to you, what do? You sit him in a corner. Oh, you're brutal. He mouths off when he's 22, he gets fired. He gets punched. He gets arrested. He has to sleep on the couch. The stakes go up as you get older. That's why we discipline them now. I tell the parents, as strict as you think you are, if you're loving and affectionate, you are so much more kind than the world. The world will pound your children. Yes, love without discipline is child abuse. You know why? Because ultimately, one day, the world is going to discipline that child, and the world hurts. The world will crush that child. Some employer is not going to say, you are just so cranky. Did you get a nap today? Now you go home and rest up. And you come back when you're ready. I'll cover till you're ready to come back. Some judge is not going to say, let me see if I've got this. You're the middle child. You have identity problems. And you're left-handed? Did you tell that to the prosecutor? We don't try those cases in this court. That's not going to happen. And I tell that to parents. I say, you truly love that child. It's hard to be too strict. You can be too mean. You can be too harsh. You can be too nasty. But parents confuse that with being too strict. That's not too strict. That's loud and emotional. That's mean. Strict? What's that mean, Jack? Think about this. If I tell my son, I don't want you to mistreat your sister at all, zero. And if you do, there's going to be consequences. Well, that's kind of too strict. I think what I'm going to do is, all right, you're allowed to cuss at her twice a week, push her down once, and pull her hair. I don't want to be too strict. You know what I mean? How can you be too strict in a context of love, Jack?
Okay, there's a parent that says, you know, doctor, you write the books, you give the speeches, but you don't know my kid. I got a 16-year-old, and I try to discipline him or her, and he threatens to call the cops on me and tell the cops I'm abusing him.
I can't tell you how many parents have said, you don't know my child. I've tried everything with my child. Nothing works. Finally, I got so frustrated, I sent him next door to run an errand and moved the family while he was gone. I will tell parents repeatedly, you cannot parent in fear. If you parent in fear, well, just give the kid the keys. Ask him if you could rent and live there because you're done. If that child says, I'm going to call the cops because of something legitimately you did, here's the phone. And I remember one time, my 13-year-old daughter, I forgot, she stole some money. She stole about $30. She's like a liberal politician, Jack. She took the money, she gave it to the library to pay off her fines, and she wrote a little note that said, thank you so much, please use the extra money to buy books. And I said to her, I said, JoJo, you took my money and you gave it to somebody else, and then you said, you see how generous I am? So... what happened was, I said, well, Joe, here's what's going to happen to you. And we listed out things, number of things going to happen to her. And I looked at her, she had this look on her face like, I'm telling the authorities. And I said, JoJo, you can do that. But remember one thing. They'll take you, they won't take me. She was bluffing, by the way. But a parent cannot live. A parent can't parent in fear. And you know what the biggest fear is, Jack? Not so much calling the cops. You know what the biggest fear is? It's this. 19, 20, 21, 22, 23-year-old, living at home, uncooperative, disrespectful, nasty to the parents. And the parents will not make him leave because they are deathly afraid of what he will do or what could happen. So they attempt to endure this kind of mistreatment until they finally get to the point, in most cases, where they can't take it anymore.
When we come back, we're going to follow up on that because that's a great question. We're with Dr. Ray Guarendi, and I'm Jack Rasool, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Krasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Rasool. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Dr. Ray Guarendi. And Doc, right at the end of the last segment, you painted a picture of, I am petrified that my 24-year-old don't do nothing, don't work, bully. But if I throw him out, I think he'll kill himself. I think he'll, I'm petrified with what he'll do.
The only reasoning that I have found, Jack, that parents will even consider is this. If you are truly afraid that that will happen, do you realize that the longer the child does this to you, and maybe your younger kids living in your home, the higher the odds are that that will happen eventually? Because now you won't just have 2 years of mistreatment at his hands. He's been mistreating you for 7 years. often what happens, Jack, is that the parents disagree. You got one parent who says, I can't take this anymore. This kid's got to go. And the other parent says, no, 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 can't happen. I won't let it happen. The end product is usually, not always, but usually, they both get to the point where they can't take the abuse. And the abuse finally pushes them to say, well, we've got to take a chance because we can't live like this.
Okay, single moms. How many have told you, my kid is like this because of the divorce?
That may be true, at least in part. But what tends to happen, there's a lot of research that says this about for single moms. To discipline, a single mom has to become more like a dad. Now, what do I mean by that? If you look at the research, dads tend to use less words, they tend to act quicker, and they tend to use more consequences. A single mom who by nature may be more negotiable, who may give more warnings, who may remind 26 times, has to work on getting rid of some of those habits so that she can have a quiet, strong authority because she needs it. She's got no backup. She's got no one there to stand beside her and say, what did your mom just tell you? So as a single mom, she really needs to have authority. And I tell single moms, you got all the authority you need because you control the environment. You control what kinds of things you put on the table. You control the money supply. You control the electrical outlets. You control it all. You still have that even as a single mom. You don't have to be a dictatorial, jackbooted, kick the door down Wonder Woman, I'm back and I'm ticked kid. But you do have to know that you have authority because otherwise you're dealing with a 15-year-old boy who's 4 inches taller than you and 45 pounds heavier, and he's looking at you like, yeah, you going to make me? You have to realize as a mom, your authority doesn't come from physical force. It comes from what you control in the environment.
Okay, Doc. A listener says, I'm guilty as charged on every count that you've been talking about for the last 20 minutes. Would you and Randy adopt my three kids? Or, if you won't, how do I turn this around?
Jack,
the inmates are running the zoo.
Well, and that's the number one reason people come to me, because they get to the point where they say, I don't like the direction this is going in. Help. I have several books on the website that deal with discipline. I got about five of them that deal with discipline. My most popular one is a book called Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. It is 100 of the most common discipline questions I get asked from parents. And that question is in it. If I've allowed this to go on for the last 11 years, what do I do now? How do I turn this ship around in the middle of the ocean? Do I immediately stop everything I'm doing that I think is causing trouble? Or do I pick one at a time? What do I do? How do I do it? How do I change this kid's attitude toward me that looks at me like, you got no authority, don't even try it? And I deal with those head-on in the books, Jack.
If you want to learn more, drray.com. Okay, let's talk about the silent epidemic, pornography. The number one site in 2018, porn site, had 4.4 billion hours of viewing. One site. Doc, what do we do?
I saw a survey that said between the ages of 11 and 19, boys, 90% chance of coming across porn. The average age is roughly around 9 or 10, their first exposure. The very first thing a parent has to do, one, no smartphone. At age 10, 12, and 14, that's insanity. That's one. Two, if that kid at age 15 or 16 has a smartphone, you better put the best parental controls you can find on it to eliminate virtually everything on the internet or the apps. Most parents don't do that, Jack. They won't do it. More than half of them have absolutely no parental controls on a computer or a smartphone, which is a computer. So they generally get bit. And the kid, well, his first exposure is early on, and so many women come to my office saying, my husband is still into pornography, and it is crushing me and our marriage.
Speaking of husbands and wives, you've got a book also entitled When Faith Causes Family Frictions. What do you mean by faith, and what do you mean by family frictions?
If someone tries to take their faith seriously, excuse me, and they are embracing what they believe most deeply, the people around them, their father-in-law, their mother, their spouse, the neighbor lady, their grown children, their adolescent son, don't necessarily like this. They don't relate to it. They attack it. They reject it. They accuse. They look for ways to undercut and accuse of being a hypocrite. So in the book, I talk about those scenarios. For example, that if you are trying to be a faithful person, a faithful Christian, people are going to either misunderstand you, critique you, attempt to put you down in some way. That's the direction of the book. One of the questions in the book is, okay, I love my faith. My spouse could care less. The only way you're going to win them over is that you have to show them that your faith is making you so much easier to live with. That spouse has to see that it's to his or her benefit that you are a faithful person. That's the first step in starting to pull them toward where you'd like them to share with you.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, thanks for coming on. You are a modern-day John the Baptist, a voice of reason and wisdom. Keep up the great work.
Jack, what a delightful visit. Thanks.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.